Hello and welcome back to the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my glorious co-host, Mikael Christiansen. How are things going, Mikael?
Yo. Yes, they are going. And pretty well. Mid-rehearsals, day in, day out of figuring out old stuff. And
It's a zombie show, basically.
Oh yeah, it's Mega Zombie. It's basically, it's been dead for close to 6 years, 5.5 years. Yeah. And now we're casting dark magic and pulling it out of the grave, which is, lots of fun. We have a lot of stuff to kind of figure out with it since.
How did that come about, actually, that they decided to, did they get some bookings for the show or did they just decide, let's do it again?
I don't know. I think it's a combination of things. Like, my conspiracy theory is basically that it's a combination of the show was decently popular and they probably have gotten some requests for it through the years. It has like kind of a very unique aesthetic and stuff. And I think also it's one of the last large running shows that the Cirkör had with the director Tilde, which is kind of the main director of the company, that that like had a very long show run, and they just did like a new massive production called Circus Days and Nights, but that one is basically a circus opera, so it can't be played in the regular venues that the company usually tours.
Circus opera. Now, I'm sure you probably mean like opera with music and everything, but I'm kind of picturing like space opera, like Star Wars, and but set in a circus.
I mean, it kind of is. The cool thing with that show, Circus Day Tonight, is that it's like the music is composed by Philip Glass, if you know who that is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's like a big ass name. I met him actually in the circus hall when they were kind of like starting the project. Like really old guy. But yeah, he composed the music and they made like a huge opera show. But that one is for specific venues, like opera venues and like large stages. Whereas like the show Knitting Peace that I'm in now is for like, how to say, like the standard size stage that these types of touring shows go to. So most stages in like various culture houses or things like that can host it.
Yeah.
It's a big show, but it's not like arena sized or anything like that. Yeah. So I guess like they're after COVID, they really also want to have shows back on the road, and there being some demand for that one, they just decided to cast Black Magic and ask us, hey, do you want to play Knitting Peace again? And you're like, sure, I guess.
do we even still have the equipment to run the show?
Because it feels really like kind of like a time machine, because I wasn't, Handstand Factory wasn't a thing last time I ran Knitting Peace. Just so many things happened in the meantime. So kind of going back in there and you hear the music and you're in the same place, and even though you haven't done it for 5 years, you still remember the cues. When you hear the music, you remember where you're supposed to be and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's lots of holes in our memories. So right now we've just been doing like loads of rigging, and like the show has an enormous fuck off rig because all of it is based on ropes and pulley systems and then knitting and threads and yarn and like just all kinds of crap you can do with that. So like the rigging is complicated to say the least. And we have a new stage technician, and she's now has to pick up all of that. And like the markings on the old truss where everything used to hang is gone because they've painted it or changed parts of it. So no one knows how certain parts of the structure used to be. So we need to kind of recreate it a bit. it's pretty damn cool. It's just, time consuming, and we also have replacements that need to learn the show and stuff. Joey Martino is in it, and she's kind of my handstand partner in the show, because we used to be two hand balancers, or we're always two hand balancers in it, and the original one named Aino Ihanainen, and she's pregnant. So it's a lot going on, to say the least. How about you?
I'd like to say I have a lot going on, but I've just been in writing and there's a lot going on behind the scenes, actually, what I can't talk about until we have some confirmation, which will probably come. We're hoping to get something next week, but yeah, it'll probably be January before I can actually talk about it. But then you'll be like, oh, what's Emma been doing and why is everything like, and it was following my other podcasts and stuff has kind of had to be shelved for a small bit until next year. And you'll understand why when it all comes out. But yeah, other than that, I've just been in, I've been in thinking hell. Do you ever think when you get into one of these thinking in circular points when you're like trying to figure stuff out mentally but have a lot going on? So while you're trying to remember a show, I'm just sitting here going, basically, that sums up most of my days. And then it's also, yeah, it's been a marked increase in socializing lately and that kind of stuff with Christmas and other stuff, which is fine. But as anyone who knows me, I'm not actually that socially a person. So it's kind of like, oh, no, I have to get it done. So it's fine. But yeah, so a bit of socializing going on. We have to like socialize before we get locked down for Omicron. Omicron. Yeah. All I can think about when people say Omicron is Unicron from like Transformers.
From
like
Transformers. I thought it's the same. That was the like the giant kind of...
The giant planet robot that turned it into the thing.
Yeah, and it eats other planets.
Yeah. And he kind of looks like, that's the thing, he kind of looks like those models you see of coronavirus. So when I seen like Omicron, I was like, you really missed it without calling him Unicron. That'd be amazing.
Like, so the next version is going to be called Megatron now, and then we're just like...
That would be so much cooler if instead of like naming them after Greek letters and, you know, beers and stuff, they actually just called them after like Transformers. Someone was actually suggesting taking the piss, like once we run out of Greek letters, we move on to Pokemon. Which is actually an incredibly nice segue for the topic of our episode
tonight.
Definitely.
Good one, Emmett.
Thank you. That was smooth. Did you like that?
Yeah, I thought they really damn smooth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so today's episode is about Pokemon.
Yeah. What's your favorite Pokemon?
My favorite Pokemon? I don't know. Well, what's his name? Gengar is pretty cool. I don't know anything about Pokemon. It was just like a bit too late for me, but he just looks cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of thing. I just don't really know any Pokemon either. I was just a bit late as well. I was one of those cool kids that didn't have Pokemon cards. But oddly enough, one of my clients is probably listening to this, or not client anymore, but he was one of my clients. He was just telling me about like his Pokemon. He's like, I made a joke about Pokemon cards. And he's like, oh, I've got all my collections still saved. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I've got all the collections out. And like, in Perfect Nick. And he has loads of first generation rare cards that probably are like, if you can get a collection price, it's probably like a down payment on a house. He was that kid who like didn't trade them, just like kept them perfect. Yeah. So yeah,
we should have, I should have kept like, or I had a friend of mine, he had the Black Lotus in Magic. He also sold it for like, I think it was like about 100 euros. He'd probably get like Omega cash for that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the actual segue into the topic, which had to do with Pokemon, was that like, if we speak handstand, do you have to catch them all?
Yeah,
I guess that is like today's topic, and I think this is kind of an interesting thing. Again, just because of like, yeah, handstand kind of develop, or like handstand practice developing kind of a culture around it, and all of that stuff that we've talked about before, but. Yeah, it becomes this kind of question, like to what degree do you need to kind of do you need to do all the things, or else you're not doing handstands, kind of.
Yeah, the Pokemonification. I made a few jokes on this, like the Pokemonification of movement, particularly in the early days of like movement practice when it was a thing, where like, you know, a certain coach was presenting certain standards that you had to have to be considered a mover, and if you didn't have these standards, you weren't a mover. And it's you see it in all kind of disciplines, but then the standards kind of change every now and then depending what people are interested in. So it is this kind of like, but as you start coming into it, these standards keep on building on self. There's like generations of standards or generation of Pokemon you got to catch. And like it's movement-amon or handstand-amon, where it's like, oh, I've got to be able to do all the things. And then like you're also kind of, you know, possibly blazing behind someone who's been in doing it for 5, 10, 15 years, who has done all the things by virtue of doing, just being around long enough. And then there's also flavor of the week things as well, flavor of the month and flavor of the year things. Where it's like, oh, if you're not doing this, you know, that's the new standard. That's the new cool thing. You see it in everything. Like, you know, we see it in fitness at the moment. There's a great one going on with like knee influencers, I call them, where it's obviously on the back of the ATG guy who's, you know, the knee guy. He's like, fix your knee. He's got the exercise to fix your knee. And then there's people attached to him, obviously, so that's fine. But then there's a whole brand of people who, I'm not even certain they know about this guy, but they're just copying his exercises and being like the knee guys, the knee girls. They're like influencing you to look after your knee. So it's a bit of a meme. Catch of the week.
Yeah, but it is really, I mean, in relation to real mimetic theory, but I think it's important to at least be aware of, because you like there becomes kind of like a mass suggestion thing where you kind of get pulled into it, and then you start valuing the things that other people value a lot. So if you're in a group of, I mean, obviously you go into calisthenics and then everyone wants to do the planche. The planche is really cool. The planche is really hard. I.e., you should want the planche, because if you do the planche, you're one of the cool guys. This will always be a factor. I think everyone that wants to do a one arm handstand and learned one is because at one point they saw it and they were really mind blown and impressed and went like, "Shit, I actually really want to do that." And then after all of the pain and suffering you go through to learn it, you do need to kind of value it, and that's great.
Yeah.
But I think down the line, it comes down to this thing of like, so where do you set the standards? Why do you set the standards you set? And do you need all of these kind of signifiers of skill or strength or flexibility, depending on what you're doing? And I think this is like that where the Pokemon thing is, like, from my perspective, you do not need to catch them all whatsoever. Like there is a certain value to catching a bunch of significant ones in that will maybe like the kind of the primary cluster of things that give you lots of options. I mean, up to, let us say that like most people that are above average interested in handstands will maybe want the one arm. And if they're serious enough and they go for that one arm, there's a bunch of skills that they should maybe attain on the way to make sure they're pathing themselves there in a reasonable manner.
Yeah. It is that kind of thing of like, I think you have, this is the thing, you have to try everything out because you won't know what your special talent is for a while. And this is the kind of thing, I think we've talked about this about like Kiev and performing in particular, and where, and just in performing in general, it's like, if we take someone who is going to be a circus artist and has to compete with like the best of the best or the best of the thing, then it's better for them to have like a nice vocabulary on something that's very unique and that they're very good at, rather than a very flat vocabulary of just like being generally good at everything, where it's like, if you're generally good, then there's nothing kind of shiny on it. So you need to like specialize in like, I don't know, fire type Pokemon or something, specialize in backbends. And, you know, we all have natural attributes. Like we can kind of split people up like roughly into front benders and backbenders in flexibility type, where it's like, okay, if you're a backbender, maybe just spending more time on contortion and Mexican and backbendy shapes and skipping them so much. And it's kind of like, you see this with a lot of people actually, which is kind of interesting, who are a bit outside the handstand community but still do handstands. They tend to just like find something they're good at and just do it because they haven't been told that there's loads of other stuff that you have to be able to do.
That's right, yeah.
You see it like a lot of like, you know, I don't know. You see a lot for, say, people coming from kind of yoga or maybe acro yoga, where, you know, the scenes that mightn't have so much of a formal coaching side or formal, this is the right way side. And they come in like, oh, they don't even know there's a difference between like a seven, a pike, a straight tuck, a hollow back. They just do what they want. And then, like, they got some very nice hollow back shapes because that's, you know, they use their strengths and that's all they really do. So it is kind of interesting.
Yeah, breaking does that thing too, where you just like, you just come up with your own shapes and your own things, and that is that to a large degree when it comes to handstand related skills, at least in there. And it's like always about coming up with your own tweak to it. I think there's certainly a value to that, and I think like if that is totally cool. And I think it's also totally cool to I mean, we've made such a stratified vocabulary ourselves with the way that we've, I mean, pretty sensible, or we both think is pretty sensible, yeah, obviously, because we spent hundreds of hours making these things. But like the fact that like two arm handstand leads into shapes, which and
yeah,
entries, which leads into pressing, which leads into one arm, because there's like both just the raw level of difficulty and time commitment on them will sort of be increasing the further in you go, and like the time committed and the difficulty. But I think particularly when it comes to like, you have all these different families, you have like all this kind of the straight action shapes,
yeah,
and which leads into the one arms, and then you have the press stuff, which which is pretty good to have for the standing, but you don't need the low press. And then you have the planche family that you can be really good low press but suck at planche. You have the handstand push-up that you can be really good at but still suck at planche and presses. You have the Mexican family, which you can be really great at and still suck at straights, or vice versa. Or you can even be great at contortion, terrible at Mexican, vice versa, and yeah, all of this. So like there are all these different kind of variations. Just depending on your body type and on kind of, yeah, leveraging your strengths and basically mostly leveraging your interests towards the domains or movements that you like the most.
Yeah. I mean,
it's pretty sensible, but I think it's easy to kind of get lost a bit with social media. You see all these things and you go like, oh shit, FOMO. I should also do Mexican because someone else did like a really cool Mexican. Then you bumble around a bit and then like, nothing really comes of it because like, okay, maybe it wasn't actually the thing you wanted, but you saw it and you got that kind of like stressed thing.
Yeah.
I should also be training on this stuff. But I think it's important to kind of stop yourself a little bit and track some of those things and go, yeah, but is this really where I'm going to commit time into? Or is it like, cause it can be fine to just get inspired, try a bit and that's it.
Yeah.
But like, I think that sort of, yeah, that FOMO sensation of, oh shit, I should also be good at this because someone else is good at it. And
yeah,
if I am not, then I am less of a person.
Yeah, that's like, you know, I think that's kind of where we'd probably maybe draw the line or something. And we'd never discourage anyone from trying something out to play around with it. And you, I think, once again, it comes down to being clear with yourself while you're doing something. It's like, oh, I seen something. I seen someone do a sequence in whatever, and it was really inspiring, and I want to try, play around, and just do it. I just want to have a fun session, or a fun week, or a fun month, just trying this out, versus like, oh shit, I seen this person doing it, I'm not doing it, therefore I'm a bad person.
Mm.
And that's kind of very important, particularly because we're in a semi-golden age of a lot of skill-based capital, social capital things, where it's like, if you look at a lot of your favorite hand balancers, there's very few of them who can do it all to a very high level. Very few. There's like some, like everyone will have a specialization or stuff they do incredibly well, and that's cool, but there wouldn't be, you know, I can't, some of the Chinese artists I can do everything, like all the crazy contortion stuff as well as straight stuff, but it's very few. But
yeah,
it is just like, it is that kind of thing. But whereas if you're like, oh, I'm on my feed and I see 10 hand balancers a day, and each one of them is like great because I'm following them. I'm like, oh, there's Mikhail. Like, what were you doing today? You were like tying a knot in a string in a one-arm handstand. So, oh, I should be tying a knot. But then there's Pavel Stankovic, and he's doing a backflip to a Mexican to a one-arm. Oh, why am I not doing a backflip to a Mexican?
Yeah.
Oh, here's Imogen. She's doing something weird. And you're just like, you're suddenly swimming. Like, you have access to some of the people who are like, possibly the most creative or the most top of the discipline that, you know, has existed or that we have record of anyway. And then we're like, oh, you're seeing these and you're comparing themselves and you're going like, oh, and now it's very good to be inspired, very good to see like this, the level, this is where I'm going to. But at the same time, when you suddenly start seeing like, oh, you're seeing all these tricks, but you're not really relating them to a person, you're just relating them to your screen. And that goes like, oh, you're building up an image of like, this is a hand balancer because I've made a composite hand balancer, not an actual hand balancer, and I made a projection.
Yeah. that is a good word, a composite hand balancer. I guess it like literally a composite impression of what it should be or what it is, and so on. And on top of that, like the classic thing that most people know, but like your primal brain doesn't know it, is the fact that you see all these things, you see mainly the success, you see the you see people like showing their best, which is fine, and it's the classic thing everyone knows on social media. It's not like in real life, lol. And we're all very acutely aware of that. But like, as you see something awesome, and you react to that awesome, like it's your
dopamine feedback reward system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That goes, okay, I should do this, or I am better than that, or like your emotional system responds to this, and that's where I think where it can be healthy to remember that, okay, well, you see someone like do a fucking switch and land with their legs together into some fancy pants stuff. Yeah, that's cool, but it's also like I like to call a lot of these things video tricks, because it's the stuff you'd spend some time nailing it on the video, but it's not what you rehearse into your show, because it is like if you understand what it means to be performing at a high level with many shows a week, you just do not do those things. But they still, I think that your brain easily kind of has the impression that this is how real life is, and it isn't. And when we then composite together all of these things, it ends up at some impossible level, and it also ends up at kind of like, it also warps what quote unquote high level or good skills or whatever, like how you would describe it. It warps what that is, because that is always in context. Like I would say that like anyone who's like does a one arm handstand, they're very capable on their hands, because like the on average general subset of skills you need to be able to do a one arm handstand is quite large, and the amount of time you've spent is quite long. So you're very capable on your hands, even if like the hardest thing you can do is a straddle one arm handstand.
But it's also like oh, percentage of the population as well.
Huh?
Percentage of the population who can do one arm handstands.
Yeah.
Is you're kind of a freak if you get to there.
Yeah, in that regard, it's definitely I think it's perhaps better to relate it to like how long time you've invested into the thing. And like for most people, if you've invested a significant amount of time, you are likely pretty decent at it. But it's also this classical discussion that I find it extremely boring, really. And it's just like, who is the best hand balancer, or who is your favorite hand balancer? I definitely have partaken in that discussion many times, and I probably will many times in the future.
Know it's Artur anyway.
Huh?
We all know it's Artur.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's kind of I just find it like a much less interesting discussion now than before. And
go on.
No, I just think it like a lot of it just has to do with like, at least for my sake, I've kind of through the years found like, okay, these are the things I find are the most fun to train. These are the ones that I assign the most value for me to do.
Hold on. Others. We're missing a Pokemon metaphor here. So Mikhail, tell me how you build your Pokemon handstand-amon deck.
My Pokemon deck. I mean, you need a bit of everything, right? Like, because there are many elements, and you need to be able to attack and defend against the different ones. I assume it's pretty like the classical elemental systems of most role playing games.
Yeah.
However, you might not have like a roster of all the elements. So, for example, the element of backbendy stuff that can fuck right off.
Dude, but I'm telling you, like, you're going to blow your shoulder doing normal one handstands. You're going to come crawling to me, and I'm going to go, Mikhail, your future is now as a contortionist.
Ah, suffering. Oh, no.
It is. I can sense it. It's in your blood. Embrace your Viking genetics and bend your back.
I'll find some like exoskeleton or some shit. Yeah, but it's an interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing because you have like, if we go back to the Pokemon metaphor, and it is interesting, is you, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but you're building your deck and you have a certain amount of points, or maybe that's magic, where you have to put in. You can only have this amount of points in your deck. So then you could specialize in one thing, then all your points go on one thing, or you could spread your points out and do a few things. And then, like, the thing is, you can change your deck month to month as well. So there is a kind of, that's the kind of thing. There is a room to, like, fuck around and change things. But at the same time, it is that kind of, to get to the higher nuanced levels, you have to kind of, like, I don't want to say not multi-class. We're straying into Dungeons and Dragons metaphors now. We're off Pokemon. You can't, like, if you multi-class, you can't get to the highest levels of the other classes. So you do have to kind of like weigh up the advantages and disadvantages.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, in the end, like you have a set amount of hours to practice and to recover from if you're for anyone. And if you surpass that ratio too much, you end up wrecked. So yeah, I think it's in general it's good to be a bit selective. And yeah. Like kind of peel back a bit. I'll peel back often on like, okay, so what is it you actually like about this? Like, what are the things that you aspire the most to do? And then you can branch out, you can see, you can piddle about. Some days you just have fun and fuck around, so on and so on. And then, but that you kind of stay in touch with the things that you like the most. Yeah, because like in the end, like trying to chase all of these various ones just because like that it seems like it's on paper the smartest thing, because then you are good as a hand balancer because you can do a bit of everything, and then it's of course also the other like big topic around this, which is like the one then of like. Are there certain things that you have more ease for learning, i.e. talent, whatever, than other things? And does that align with your interests, or is it like, does it not?
Yeah, just like you and backbending.
That can be a tricky one. Yeah, like me and backbending. Like luckily both the pointers are kind of away from the backbending.
I've seen you like the one backbend a year you do, and suddenly you got a pretty good bridge. Like I can smell it. I can see you doing a triple fold. Let me sit on you.
Oh my god! Well, when I am like mega dead, someone can just like break my corpse into a triple fold and take a picture. That'll be good. Then they can send that on into the aeons of the future and just like, yeah, look, he could do a triple fold.
Mikael Christiansen could do everything.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of an interesting one, actually, to go on. Is if we define our elemental types of handstands and say what some of the attributes might be and what you might want to look out for, just for a bit of comedy.
Yeah.
More so than anything else. So we have like the straight shape family, which I would say would basically be our straight handstand as we know it, containing the line. Now, obviously, this has all its different shapes. This is the kind of thing, like the way I split handstands up mentally is by shoulder position. We have the straight line shapes, we have the Mexican shoulder shapes, and we have the closed shoulder shapes. And then they have their subgroups in there, depending what your legs or torso are doing to follow along. So, and then we have one arm as well, which would be a thing, which would also have variations on the shoulder positions too. But, so with the straight one, obviously, the advantage of a straight one is you get to do a straight handstand. The disadvantages of the straight handstand is you are basically going to be one of these people who will be constantly saying, no, my line doesn't look good enough. You can get over fixated with the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the
line specialists.
Yeah. Who are just like, oh, yeah, like you constantly look at the line. I must refine. I must look like this, and I must search for the perfect. Oh, you can never get too much good at the basics. You must always repeat, and I just fall asleep.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, actually, to say that, like, because Mexican shoulder shapes, people don't train too much. They're kind of tricky, and people are generally good at them, whatever. But it's very rare to find someone in the kind of contortion shapes who does more contortion-style handstands who gets prepalepsy. It was like, I must do 2 minutes, 5 by 2 minutes of this before I move on to my advanced stuff.
Mm.
It is kind of, yeah, it's kind of interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I think the straight family, I mean, like, I think everything would think through kind of like the straight one arm shapes and so on, like, even all the way up until there. You have people who really like kind of that, and mainly, I mean, they get very good control kind of in the, like, balancing. They get very effortless at, like, locking the shoulder in this, like, nice classic handstand shape. They also often get, like, if they get really good at one arms, like, figa style balances can also come to some degree, like, easily, because you're in such kind of an elevated shoulder position, if that's kind of what you're constantly working towards.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, of course, on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, like, the planchers, who basically just, like, I'm sure most of you people that are out there that do a lot of handstands and interact with a lot of handstand people, you know, like, those couple of people who are just like, hi, I do planche, and that is all that matters. Like, as if your entire thing, oh, you train hand balancing, you do all different handstands, that person does planche. They need to be a horizontal line. That is the only thing that matters. I know several people that are like that, like, for many years. It's just like, they need to be a horizontal line, or else nothing matters. And you need to have the epic fucking feeling of just floating above the ground by the sheer force of your shoulders.
Yeah. We could almost call these, like, the linear geometry types. We have, like, the straight up and the straight sideways ones.
Yeah, and they form a cross when
the holy handstand.
But I mean, like, yeah, people that do loads of planches and all that stuff, of course, you have easy access to low pressing to a degree as well. Like, form up in handstand might often not be the greatest, since you leverage the forces you have, and it's easier for someone who's omega planching to just lean into their biceps and delts. But they have loads of power, and if they kind of combine that with, like, more quote unquote technical hand balancing, you usually see people who have the planche stuff and have it kind of easily to a degree are also people with good strength to weight ratio and leverage in terms of body proportions and stuff. And like, strength moves are, of course, accessible to such people. Then you have the benders, of course, like, everything of back bending, and I think there is a,
you have, like, flexible type and, like, stick type.
Yeah, but I mean if you look upon among kind of the ones that do back bending, maybe like Mexican type would be kind of like ice element, and then like contortion handstand would be water element, because, like, they don't necessarily overlap.
Yeah,
they're in a similar kind of area, but, like, they're not really, like, yeah. I know contortionists who just, like, oh, fuck Mexican, and the opposite.
Yeah, no, it's kind of, they're similar but not same. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we also have subgroups of, like, my spine bends type and the fuck you, I'm just going to open my shoulders type. There is too. And the open the shoulders type is quite it's a classic one in the two open straight line as well. You'll generally find that in the tuck and my butt is hanging over as well kind of shapes as well. Mm. You get that. Whereas not necessarily the back is bending as well. Whereas the scorpion with the closed shoulder type, when you get them really good, or when you want to work on that skill, then the back has to bend. Otherwise, you're doing a planche. If your back doesn't bend, you close your shoulders.
Mm. Yeah, there's several. Yeah, what other ones do we have? I mean, you have the arm benders, of course, like handstand push-up-y.
I don't put the arm benders, the wide arm handstand type, who just like have their arms really wide and slightly bent as well. And it's a rare type. It's a rare type. Generally, like, it goes along with like on the I'm strong crew, but at the same time, not the I'm planchy crew.
And then, of course, flyers.
Yeah.
Very, that's definitely
flying one type. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you put them on top of someone in hand to hand, etc. They kick ass. They can usually do pretty well on ground, but particularly on two arms. But like one arms can, like, there is often a discrepancy between the ability on one arm on ground versus what they do on the base or on cane versus base, where like they just like breathe through figas and like combinations and whatnot on the base, and you put them on the ground, and like the searching for balance element is not developed to the same degree, even though like technique and placement and body awareness in the position is just like stellar, but there's no the response mechanism and kind of the force you need to correct balance constantly is just not developed.
Yeah. What would you call that? Flying type? Obviously flying type, but I'm kind of picturing...
I mean, it would have to like, be wind element. Are you sitting and making some fucking list of this, Emmett?
We'll have the transcripts, so it's fine. We're going to like make handstand them on as our next Kickstarter.
Oh, God. I mean, some people are probably going to take us like too literal here and think that we're actually doing a like elemental types here.
You know, someone is actually just going to take this whole episode and turn it into something and make it into a system. It's okay. We came up with this first.
Ice type.
Your handstand phenotype. What we really need, though, like, is... Do you remember top trumps?
No idea what
that is. Don't remember top trumps. Oh, my God. So top trumps are like a playing card game. Or, like, the classic one would be you'd have cars or... like villain, like comic book villains, like Marvel villains or Marvel heroes. And they'd have attributes and skill points put onto them. Like, so weapons 100, strength 50. And you'd be playing with me and we'd have a battle. So I'd pull out someone. And if it was my go, I'd call out like, you know, Galacticus, weapons 100. And you'd go, oh, Reed Richards. Shit, I've only got like weapons 90. So I take your cards and whoever got the card, so whoever's card trumps the other one. It could be like cars as well. It could be like, oh, Audi A8, no indicators. You'd be like, oh, wow, my BMW has indicators. That kind of shit.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you could have like a handstand. You could have a handstand top trumps where we rate all the like thing by like, you know, how hard it is to do. Balance required, flexibility, blah, blah, blah. So you kind of like can rate all the kind of things and then have a handstand top trumps.
We just need to adjust for all of the variables in the known universe. So there'll be many cards.
Yeah, exactly. But that's how we keep getting our next generation of ones. Release like generation 2. Once everyone's got a whole set, then we'll release G3.
But you also have press to handstand nerds. That is definitely one.
Press nerds,
I'm certainly in that category. I remember like when I learned my first press, I was like, whoa, pressing. I didn't know it was called a press to handstand. I was just like, shit, my legs went off the floor. That's pretty cool.
I've invented something new that no one's done before.
Yeah. Just like mind blown. What just happened? But yeah, I think like the search for anti-gravity is like at least some sort of common denominator between most people that do this stuff on more than just like a semi-regular basis.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, for me, that is certainly like there just is something really fucking cool about like the way that you, you just like fucking fly.
I've seen that shit you're doing handstands on recently as well, where you are literally flying.
What
was that sculpture Joey was doing handstands on her story recently?
The
contraption.
She's you mean probably mean up on the up high, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically it's handstand canes that have two dolls kind of like attached, like they go through two dolls, and the dolls are made like the dolls aren't actually knitted. It's kind of weird. So they are these like weird kind of puppets looking things that she's handstanding on like 5 meters in the air. And it is pretty terrifying. I've been up there doing a couple of 1 hours myself, and it requires you to focus. And she was a bit worried about it at first, but now it's coming along.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think it's time to wrap the cast right there.
Yeah. So, loads of different things you can do. Commit to the things that you like the most.
Basically, I think the moral of the story of this cast is like, maybe you can't catch them all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's still fine.
Yeah.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode along with the show notes and any relevant references on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.